Welcome back after the constituency period. We have the bill before us.
Hello, Chairperson.
Hi.
Of the hotel park here.
There's somebody.
It's Moss. Pardon?
Moss. Linda. You're disrupting our meeting, my friend. Okay, I think she's
good
quite
loud.
Okay, hi. Okay, so basically, I'm glad you're in, Comrade Mamora, because I know you have to go and vote elsewhere. You're the whip, right? And I really need to raise this thing. So we sit in the mornings on a Tuesday, which befuddles me, but I'm not going to cover that yet again. And then we have no consistent Wi-Fi in the basement offices we have in the NCOP. So you have to rush from the house, that ends around 2 o'clock, to be at home for a COPAS 2 meeting. And in this case, I did leave half an hour earlier, but still you have to get through the traffic and attend to some practical things. So I wish we had the original arrangement, committee meetings in the morning, physical plenaries in the afternoon. But having said that, welcome to Treasury. I have sent a letter out to the new DG, Duncan Peterson, to congratulate him. And Kuleleku, you sent it, the email to the Treasury, right? To the DG's office. Okay, good. Right. Because I didn't have a cell number, I just got it now. I'll forward it to WhatsApp. I also sent you a copy of a letter of acknowledgement of Commissioner Edward Kiswetter being appointed to the World Body on Customs and Excise, right? Having said that, I see there's some apology recorded in the chat. I think it's Willie Alcombe. Is that right?
Yes, Chair. I also have an apology from Ms. Mamarekhan.
Oh, is she not here on this chat group at the moment?
No. It was Ms. Matlang who was greeting you, Chair.
Oh, right. Sorry. I thought it was Mora. Okay, fine. Yeah, no, I did speak with her and her chairperson, Mandla, and he explained they're voting on a very challenging bill. Having said that, who's here from Treasury?
We have
Sorry, I'm looking at the names. Yeah. Who's leading the team here? Do you know?
I think it should be Maling Marijeng, an MP.
Okay. All right. So, is she here? Yeah. Okay. Go ahead then. I see. Okay. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And good afternoon to all honorable members of this committee. And thank you very much for this opportunity to come and brief you with on the amendment of the amendment bill for municipal fiscal powers and functions. So we are presenting this proposed amendment as a very important amendment that we need to make in this bill, because it is enabling municipalities to be able to finance a very important infrastructure that is key for the investments that we require to support the economy, and also to increase access to services. So this is not development charges, which we are including in this amendment, which actually inform in this amendment. It is not a new, and I think that's what we want to emphasize, that it's not a new source of revenue. It is an existing source of revenue for municipalities, but it is not well regulated. It's very fragmented in this regulation. It's not standardized. It's not transparent in terms of how it is calculated. So what this bill is trying to do is really to formalize and better regulate and standardize and ensure equitable charging of this important revenue source, because of the problems that exist now, it has not been utilized effectively to support investment in infrastructure. And I think this is the bill that enables municipalities to tap into the private sector funding that is based on the principle of the user pays. So where the developments are commercial and they're going to benefit at the commercial level, then it is standard across, globally that the private sector on approval of the requests for the building request, that they be charged and that charge be awarded. So what we are doing here is to make sure that we are standardizing the charge and making it much more transparent. And we do believe that it will go a long way given the constrained fiscal framework and also the uncertainty with regard to investors with regard to infrastructure that they need to support their development. So this actually enables them to be able to contribute and to ensure that whenever they are planning developments, the timing of development or of the investments that is required in the bulk infrastructure is able to be addressed as accordingly. So we are also requesting this committee to also consider the technical refinements that's on two areas that we have picked up, which are quite important in ensuring that the definition of this, the definitions in this bill are appropriate for what this bill needs to achieve. So we are going to be able to outline that, and we hope that the committee can kindly consider and recommend on those proposed technical amendments that on the errors that we have picked up in the bill. So we are, I do have a team that is led by Wendy Fanon, and they will make a presentation to you today. And that team is Wendy Fanon, Sandra Hetle, and Machuen Mpanyan. So they will take us through the presentation. So thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, you will manage your team. I'm not going to keep saying next and so on. Is that okay, Madhijan?
Thank you, Chair. We'll manage them. Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. All right.
when do you manage the team, Ned? Yeah.
Thank you very much. And
Wendy, what's all this laughter about? Can't be joining as a committee. You are before the committee, Wendy. You can't be so selfish and laugh without letting us know and joining in. Okay, Wendy.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity to present. This is actually a very serious matter, so it's actually an integral change that we've been pushing for quite a long time. If we can just move to the next slide. What is quite important is that we all know that municipalities are underinvesting in infrastructure. And that is actually impeding economic growth and development. And that is a very big concern because municipalities, particularly the larger municipalities, are really the growth engines of the country. And by not having bulk infrastructure in place, bulk infrastructure is needed for you to get reticulation like water, electricity, you need roads and the like. And those infrastructure, if it's not in place, then you cannot put in residential properties, you cannot put in place business properties or have functioning properties. So that is impeding growth and development. And that is something that we need to address. And there's various ways to address it. And if we can go to the next slide, what is quite key, next slide as well. What is quite key is that we need to acknowledge often people refer to the local government fiscal framework. They just refer to municipal owned revenues. They basically say that that is the fiscal framework that municipalities have. But it's actually not true. It's much more comprehensive and inclusive than that. If you look at the left-hand column, it actually indicates the revenue sources that municipalities have at their disposal to deliver the services that are their responsibilities, which is contained in the right-hand column. And what you would like to see ideally is that own revenues, and that consists of municipal property rates and user charges, and also the sharing of the general fuel levy, which is also a general revenue source, are then used towards services that benefit people that can pay for services. That then includes households that can pay for services, businesses that can pay for services. And you would like to see the grants or the from the fiscus to be directed towards social services and benefiting the poor. So if you put in place services that benefit the non-poor, you do not want grants to be used for that purpose. You do want own revenues to be used. And that is where development charges come in. It is a new or existing revenue source that we want to reform to be more able to be used by municipalities. When we take you through the presentation, we will highlight some of the problems that's currently in place in the system. And that is why we want one uniform system that's applicable throughout the country that can work both for the developers as well as the municipalities concerned. The development charge will be used to put in place bulk infrastructure, and the developer will benefit because it will have the municipal services underpinning the development, and he or she will recoup the cost through selling the properties because it will be included in the selling price. The municipalities will benefit, on the other hand, because it will extend the services it provides. It will have an extended property rights base, so it will also benefit from the system. So it's really meant to be a win-win situation for both parties. If we can go to the next slide. Next slide, please. Oopsie, it doesn't look like the slide is moving. Okay, there we go. And what this slide then just indicates is exactly what I've now explained, is that if you look on average, of course, it will differ substantially per municipality. This is more a reflection of the average. So if you look at, on average, it's 75% own revenues. But if you look at the larger, more urban municipalities, it will be 85% own revenues. And if you look at national transfers, on average, it will be 25%. But if you look for the more urban municipalities, it will be closer to, say, 10%. And for the more rural municipalities, that national transfers will be closer to 80%. And then this just indicates what I've already discussed, how the revenue sources should be attributed between the paying customers and the non-paying customers. Of course, the development charges will not be applicable for poor households. Poor households will be funded through the fiscus still. Development charges will be targeted at those that can afford to pay for services. So that is a key distinction. It will not be to the detriment of the poor. Next slide. Okay, and this I've already explained in quite a bit of detail, so we can skip this slide. Okay, and then as Marijing has pointed out, currently we do have challenges with development charges. It is regulated amongst others through provincial ordinances, but it does not cover all areas and all municipalities, and it's also different in terms of what is regulated. So what we want to do is to pull this all together and get one uniform system where it is just payable, a development charge. So it's not something that's payable all the time. It is just when a developer applies to a municipality for a land development application. And as part of the land development application, it's approved. To give a very good example of when it will be applicable, we know that particularly in urban areas, we've got urban creep. And what then happens, I see the slide presentation has disappeared. We then get urban creep, or where the rural areas then become, or defined areas that's rural become then part of the urban landscape. So you would get, for example, land that was previously classified as agricultural properties, then become part of the urban landscape that is either made available for business opportunity or residential opportunities, for example. And then as part of the land reclassification for that development, a development charge is then applicable. So it's a once-off levy that's applied when that application is approved. And it will particularly benefit, as I indicated, then more faster urban growth in particular. Of course, it does not mean that it cannot apply in more rural areas as well. It can be applicable there as well, because we know that nothing is really completely urban or completely rural. Next slide, please. And the next slide is actually quite important. Next slide, please. I see it's not showing yet. Is that we've actually done some analysis, and what we've determined is that there's about, if this development charges are properly regulated, there's a likelihood that we can even get in revenues as much as 20 billion per annum. And so that is quite a substantial new source or additional source or existing source that can be better optimized. Most probably that's the exact correct wording. And so it can substantially increase the ability of municipalities to be responsive to development. So that is the reason why we're putting these reforms forward. What we will be doing now is to indicate the objectives and the benefits of what we're trying to achieve. And then we'll also be taking you through clause by clause and exactly why the clause is there and what we intend to do with that clause. And then lastly, what we'll take the committee through is then to highlight the technical refinements that we've picked up and what's critical for the committee to consider those refinements. If I can then hand over to Ms. Sekhetle, and then after that, it will be Mtweni that will take you through the clause by clause analysis. Thank you.
Oh, okay, thanks, Wendy. Good afternoon, Chairperson and colleagues. I'll take you through the next few slides. So this slide just outlines the objectives and key reforms introduced in the bill. The bill seeks to establish an ambiguous, fair, and consistent basis for municipalities to recover the development charges. It also brings about a more standardized, equitable, and sustainable framework for financing municipal infrastructure based on the benefit principle. And it also seeks to enable applicants to accurately estimate their development charges liability and ensure that municipalities are able to provide the required infrastructure timelessly. And once enacted, the bill will ensure accountability
will be we lost you, my friend. Can you just repeat the last minute, please? You were cut off.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll just start with the right side of the presentation. So once the bill is enacted, it will ensure accountability and transparency in the establishment and collection and expenditure of development charges. It will also provide for a uniform regulatory framework, meaning that the principles and method of calculations will be the same across all the municipalities. The bill will also create certainty and certainty for all parties on how development charges should be imposed and regulated. And lastly, it will promote accountability and the predictability that current residents, especially the poor, are not required to subsidize the cost of commercially viable developments. Next slide, please. So these are some of the benefits of development charges, and these are benefits for both municipalities and for applicants. for municipalities, an effective system of DCs will enhance revenue streams for financing strategic municipal infrastructure, which will enable municipalities to provide infrastructure in a timely and sufficient manner, thereby supporting economic development. It will also provide a pledgeable revenue stream to support borrowing for infrastructure and brings uniformity across all across municipalities on the application of DCs, which will eliminate unfair competition.
Colleagues, is it me or is she fading away?
No, she faded.
Okay.
Faded, Chairperson. Faded here as well.
She's struggling.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you for about a minute and a half, I think.
Sure. Should I start from the benefits to municipalities?
Can you hear me now? Right. Yeah, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay. So I was just indicating that benefits for municipalities, it means that the an effective system of DC will enhance revenue streams for financing strategic municipal infrastructure, which will enable municipalities to provide infrastructure in a timely and sufficient manner, thereby supporting economic development. And secondly, development charges will provide a pledgeable revenue stream to support borrowing for infrastructure. It will also bring uniformity across municipalities on the application of DCs, which will eliminate unfair competition and treatment of applicants, both within. Lastly, that a clear legal framework will minimize litigation in the administration of DC. Some of the benefits for the developers are that the legislative framework will promote predictability, meaning that applicants will be able to accurately estimate their DC liabilities and hold municipalities to account for the timely delivery of required infrastructure. Can you go to the previous slide? Yes, thank you. And also the legislation will promote fairness, meaning that applicants pay only for the infrastructure investments which they benefit from. And lastly, that it will promote transparency, that DCs will ensure equitable and transparent allocation of the cost of infrastructure installed and its quality. Next slide, please. So this diagram indicates how development charges work. As already indicated, the municipalities is responsible for the external infrastructure, more especially the bulk infrastructure. For example, there under bulk infrastructure, we have the water treatment works, the pumping stations, the reservoirs, and bulk water pipeline. So the bulk infrastructure can be paid by various sources of revenue, like your grants, loans, reserves, and development charges.
Can I ask you to turn over, because Sandra's disappearing the whole time. It's a bit problematic. So can I ask you to take over and continue with the presentation, please? Thanks.
Thanks, Wendy. Good afternoon, colleagues. My name is Machoni Mpiana. I will continue from where Sandra has left off. So on this slide, we're just showing a schematic diagram of how development charges works. And she was just explaining that municipalities have various sources of revenue from which to provide services like your loans, also the tariffs and the development charges. But on this specific diagram, we're indicating that the municipality has the responsibility for providing external infrastructure, more specifically the bulk infrastructure, for example, the water treatment works, the water or the bulk water pipelines,
And with regard to the internal infrastructure, that is the responsibility of the applicant or the developer. They are responsible for providing, for example, internal pipe network, and they are also responsible for the provision of connector pipeline, that is the link infrastructure. You can move to the next slide, please. These are some of the stakeholders that we have consulted from the policy position until when we were doing the actual amendment to the Act. So I won't go through the list of the stakeholders that we've consulted. Can we please move to the next slide? So we have published the bill for public comments, and written comments were received from various stakeholders, including all the spheres of government, property owners, non-government institutions, as well as from the public. And comments were analyzed, and when necessary, the bill has been refined. And National Treasury held a feedback session with stakeholders to inform them of the outcome of the public consultation processes. Next slide, please. Then the following slide, please. On this slide, I will just take the committee through the key definitions or concepts in the bill. The first one relates to the external engineering service, which means engineering service situated outside the boundaries of a land area and which is necessary to serve the use and development of the land area. And the municipality is responsible for providing this external engineering service, as I've indicated in the previous slide. And external engineering services has two portions to it, or are made up of two portions. That is the bulk engineering service, as well as the link engineering service, where bulk engineering service means a capital infrastructure asset, which is associated with that portion of an external engineering service, which is intended to ensure delivery of municipal engineering services for the benefit of multiple uses or the community as a whole, whether existing or to be provided as a result of development in terms of this municipal special development framework. And link engineering services means the capital infrastructure asset associated with that portion of an external engineering service, which links an internal engineering service to the applicable bulk engineering service. Then we have internal engineering service, of which the provision of which is the responsibility of the applicant. It means an engineering service within the boundaries of a land area, which is necessary for the use and development of the land area, and which is to be owned and operated by the municipality or a service provider. Then we have a rebate, which means a reduction granted by a municipality in terms of Section 9E of the bill on the amount of development charges payable for a category of applicants or a category of land development as per the criteria determined in its policy on development charges. Next slide, please. The next slide, please. Thank you. These slides will be indicating summary of the bills or summary of the provisions in the bill. The first one is Clause 9A, which relates to the power to levy development charge. And we are saying that a municipality may levy a development charge in respect of a land development application submitted to it in terms of Section 33, Subsection 1, read with Section 45 of SPLUMA. And we are saying a municipality may, because the municipalities have a choice whether to levy development charge or not. And we are also linking it to the provisions of the Constitution in Section 229 of the Constitution, because the Constitution says that a municipality may levy rates on properties as well as fees on services, or fees on services that they provide or they are provided on their behalf. And if a municipality decides to levy development charge, its municipal council must adopt a resolution for the municipality to levy development charges, and thereafter it must comply with this Act. Next slide, please. Clause 9B, which relates to the adoption and the contents of a policy on development charges. I've indicated in the previous slide that if a municipality decides to levy development charges, then it must comply with the Act or the provisions of the Act. One of those provisions is that a municipal council must adopt a policy consistent with this Act on the levying of development charges in the municipality.
And this policy must, among others, treat applicants liable for development charges equally, equitably, and fairly, and also ensure that there's no duplication of cost in the manner in which development charges are calculated. So the municipality have to indicate that they are going to fund development charges from development charges, but they cannot fund the same infrastructure from development charges and also from the tariffs, for example. Then the policy has to set out the methodology for calculation of a unit cost per engineering service. Next slide, please. Clause 9C, which relates to the community participation. So we are saying that before a municipality can adopt a policy on development charges, the municipality is required to follow a process of community participation that is consistent with Chapter 4 of the Municipal Systems Act. And the municipality must display the draft policy on development charges for a period of at least 30 days to allow the community members to provide inputs and comments on the draft policy before it can be adopted. And the municipality must advertise in the media in the manner provided for in Section 21 of the Municipal Systems Act. Next slide, please. Clause 9D relates to bylaws to give effect to policy on development charges. So we know that a policy on its own cannot be enforced. And for a policy to be enforceable, then a municipality must adopt and publish a bylaw in terms of Section 12 and 13 of the Municipal Systems Act to give effect to the implementation of its policy on development charges. A municipality's bylaw or development charges may be integrated into other bylaws relating to municipal planning or a related area of municipal legislative competence. We put this provision in the bill given that we understand that municipalities already have other municipal planning bylaws in place, and they can just integrate a chapter or a section that relates to development charges within their existing municipal planning bylaws instead of coming up with a new bylaw. Next slide, please. Clause 9E, which relates to the rebates and exemption. So we are saying that if a municipality has opted to levy development charges in terms of Section 9A, subsection 1, it may grant a rebate for a category of applicants or a category of land developments through reducing the development charge payable in respect thereof, or exempt a category of applicants or category of land developments from paying development charges where it has set out the criteria for rebate or exemption in its policy on development charges. Then if a rebate or exemption is granted in terms of Section 1, the municipality must set out reasons and identify the alternative funding source for the required bulk engineering services to the value of the rebate or exemption. And we put these two clauses in, or two provisions in here, the one about the criteria and the one about identifying the alternative funding source for the required bulk engineering services to guard against any abuse of the rebates as well as the exemptions. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9F relates to the engineering services agreements. We're saying that an engineering service agreement must be concluded in respect of any approved land development which necessitate the installation of internal engineering services or external engineering services, whether by the municipality or an applicant. Some of the provisions that this engineering service agreement should regulate at least the following matters. That is the nature and the extent of the internal engineering services or external engineering services that must be installed by the municipality or an applicant, the timing of commencement and completion of the internal engineering services or external engineering services that must be installed by the municipality or an applicant, the amount of an applicant's cost of installation or the process for determining that amount, where an applicant is to install link engineering services or bulk engineering services, including the process after installation for making any adjustment to that amount, and also indicate the dispute resolution
in cases where one of the parties may default from the engineering services agreement or the terms of the engineering service agreement. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9G relates to the installation of external engineering services by an applicant. And we put this clause in given that the municipality or the development charges can either be paid in monetary terms or in kind where the applicant installs infrastructure on behalf of the municipality. So we are saying a municipality which levies development charges may agree in writing with an applicant that the applicant installs all or part of the bulk engineering services required for an approved land development, and the municipality may offset the cost of installation of such bulk engineering services against the associated development charge. A municipality may require that bulk engineering services are installed to accommodate a greater capacity than that which is required for the land development, especially where such greater capacity of the bulk engineering services will support future developments in the area of the land development as determined by the municipality. Then if the cost of installing bulk engineering services by an applicant exceeds the development charge for the land development, the municipality must reimburse or offset the amount in excess of the development charge in accordance with an agreed payment schedule by a period not exceeding 3 years from the date of completion of the installation by an applicant, unless an applicant waives his or her right to reimbursement of that amount or any part thereof. And we put the time period there not exceeding 3 years, given that we want to give the municipality enough time to make the necessary budgeting requirements for them to make the reinvestment. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9H, which relates to the non-installation of bulk engineering services by a municipality. We are saying that if a municipality fails to complete the installation of bulk engineering services within a period of 12 months from the completion date as stipulated in an engineering services agreement, then the municipality must reimburse the applicant that portion of the development charge which is attributed to the failure, with interest charged at the applicable rate as determined in terms of Section 8, subsection 1A of the PFMA, and calculated from the date of completion as stipulated in the engineering services agreement. The municipality and an applicant may agree to extend the time period for completion of the bulk services by the municipality. We put this provision here, given that there might be other circumstances which are outside of the municipality's control and might affect the completion date as outlined in their engineering services agreement. So we put this provision to say that they, both parties, the municipality and the applicant, may agree to extend the time period. So if within this extended time period, then the municipality is able to complete the completion of the bulk services, then it doesn't have to reimburse the applicant. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9I relates to the bulk and link engineering services as part of internal engineering services. So we say that where a bulk or link engineering service is intended to service subsequent developments and transverse the internal boundaries of the land development by an applicant, both services must be regarded as external engineering service. And the reason why we put this provision in is that there might be a situation where you find that a link or a bulk engineering service it's passing through the land development area. And when subsequent applicants come, they might refuse to pay development charges because they might view it as being an internal engineering service. So we just wanted to make it clear that it is to be regarded as external engineering service in that kind of a situation. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9J relates to the dispute resolution. So if a person's rights are affected by a decision regarding development charges taken by a municipality,
then such a decision or such a person may appeal against that decision in accordance with the mechanisms provided for in Section 62 of the Municipal Systems Act. Then where a dispute arises in relation to any matter that is regulated by an engineering services agreement, then such a matter must be resolved in accordance with the dispute resolution mechanism provided for in that agreement. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9K relates to the delegations. So here we're just saying that except to the extent provided, sorry.
There's an interruption. Can you help there, please, man? Oh, it's sorted. Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Sorry about that, Sandra.
Thank you. So we are saying that except to the extent provided otherwise in this chapter or in any other legislation, a power or duty conferred upon a municipality in terms of this chapter, other than the power of a municipal council to adopt a development charges policy and a bylaw, may be delegated to an official of the relevant municipality. So any power or duty related to the development charges can be delegated, but the power to adopt a development charges policy as well as a bylaw cannot be delegated. So that means the responsibility of the municipal council.
Who is this? Who keeps interrupting? Who is it exactly? Please, can I know?
It's Moss Chair.
But I think it's Moss again. It's very predictable, right? Can you just give it a ring and tell her, please, man? It's a committee meeting. Thank you.
Go ahead, Chair. Please. Yeah, thank you, Chair. No, I was just clarifying that any power or duty that is related to development charges can be delegated to an official within the relevant municipality. But the power to adopt development charges policy as well as the bylaw remains the responsibility of the municipal council and it cannot be delegated. Next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 9L relates to the financial misconduct. So section 171 of the Municipal Finance Management Act applies with the necessary changes required by the context where an official of a municipality willfully or negligently contravenes any provision of this act. Next slide, please. Thank you. So we just wanted to indicate what municipality should do or is expected to do in order to prepare for the passing of the legislation. So we are saying that if a municipality decides to levy development charges, its municipal council must adopt a resolution for municipality to levy development charges and thereafter comply with the bill once enacted. When they are complying with the bill, it means they need to adopt a policy on development charges consistent with this act on the levying of development charges in the municipality and also adopt and publish a bylaw in terms of Section 12 and 13 of the Municipal Systems Act to give effect to the implementation of its policy on development charges, and that they can integrate the development charges bylaw within their existing municipal planning bylaws or a related area of municipal legislative competence. And a municipality which levies development charges in terms of a pre-existing policy or bylaw as at the date of commencement of the Act must ensure that it complies with the Act within 36 months after the date of commencement of this Act. And we gave it a period of 36 months, given that development charges is not a new source, that because municipalities are already levying it and they have policies or bylaws that are existing. So they just need to refine their bylaws or policies in line with the Act once it has been enacted. The next slide, please. So what sort of capacity and support will National Treasury be giving to municipalities to ensure that they are able to successfully implement the bill once it has been enacted? So to ensure successful implementation of the development charges, municipalities will be equipped with the necessary tools and skills. And to date, a service provider has been appointed by National Treasury to undertake the capacity assessment of different categories of municipalities to implement development charges. So with this capacity assessment, we want municipalities to come forward and indicate their areas of needs or their capacity needs. And based on those, then we will develop set of tools that we will be training municipalities on to ensure that they will be able to implement the bill once enacted. And furthermore to that, the Minister of Finance is to make regulations regarding development charges, and a National Treasury will develop implementation guidelines, including a DC calculator, pro forma DC policy, pro forma bylaws, as well as the engineering services agreement. Next slide, please. So I will be handing over from here to Wendy to take us through the proposed technical changes to the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Wendy, before we go on, these changes that you're speaking of, they're the ones that the minister wrote to us about. Is that correct? Or what are you dealing with here? Is these the changes? When you say technical changes, what do you mean?
Absolutely correct.
All right. You know what? You should answer this question, right? Why is this happening? You see, previously, I mean, like, you know, we never had this, Wendy. You know, where after a bill has been adopted by the NA, now and then there were glitches, technical glitches with the ATC section, right? It was Parliament's like confusion sometimes in cooperation with you, sometimes yourself as department officials, sometimes as Parliament. But now I see it's happening quite regularly. It's unusual. It shows there's a quality of exchange between the Treasury and the Parliament is declining. Well, why is this happening? This is about the third time in the last 18 months we get a bill adopted by the NA, then the department discovers there's some botch-ups, and then the minister writes to us. Obviously, we look at it on its specific merits, but can you explain why it happens? First, take us through it, and then explain later why it happens, okay? Either you or the DDG, please. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, really, apology for this. What happened is how we picked this up is when we were busy with the guidelines, because we, although we're currently processing the bill, we are also in the process of, you know, starting to work on the regulations and the guidelines. And then when going through that, unfortunately, we picked up certain mistakes. It is very, very unfortunate, and we should have picked it up sooner. One of the reasons why it was done is that when we developed the legislation, the SPLUMA amendment clauses were not yet in place. So we were working on a draft document where they're now closer to finalization, where certain changes were made. So unfortunately, those things happen when you're working alongside changing one piece of legislation at the same time another department changes another piece of legislation. And that was what resulted in some of the first two changes that I'm going to present has got to do with lands for park and open spaces. We used it differently. We refer to open parks and spaces, and that is the incorrect terminology. That's the first error that occurred. So we want to make changes to the definition just to use exactly the same terminology that's used in the SPLUMA. And then secondly, land for parks and open spaces do not fall within the SPLUMA definition of infrastructure. And when this legislation was crafted, it was assumed that it falls within the definition of infrastructure, which is not correct either. So we need to make those two changes to the definitions so that we align back to SPLUMA, so that otherwise what will happen in the end is that there could be confusion when these two pieces of legislation are then, evaluated alongside each other. So we are aligning ourselves to SPLUMA, and so you can see that the parts that's underlined has just changed the wording around, and then also it made it clear that it is capital infrastructure, but also it also links back to not just engineering services as defined in Spluma, but also parks and open spaces. And that is what this changes are entailing. If we can go to the next slide. We're just making it clear that the capital infrastructure asset, you will need to add to that definition parks and open spaces or municipal service. This is just linked to the previous change as well. So it all relates back to parks and open spaces and ensuring that that is also subject to development charges. Because when a developer puts in place an application, we know in residential areas, in terms of municipal practices and policies, it's also required in a residential area that there are open spaces and parks. So it's critical for the development. So it's not a nice to have. It is an actual requirement. So it's just to clarify that. If we can then go to the next slide. And this is an unfortunate mistake that's creeped in. So it's got nothing to do with Spluma. It basically refers to a municipality where it will require the installation of a link engineering service. And unfortunately, the NOT actually changes completely the meaning. The NOT should never have been there. It is working through the legislation. We missed that one. It is unfortunate, and we really apologize to the committee. Like I said, we picked it up when we were working on the guidelines, and we should have picked it up sooner. So we really want to profusely apologize. This was an unnecessary mistake from our side. And DDG and MP, I don't know if you want to add to this as well. Thanks.
It's MP von Squirn. No, thank you, Wendy.
I'm also covered by your response, Wendy. Thanks.